Welcome back to the Placeholder Podcast, everybody. I'm Kaylee Fretz. We took a week off last week. I think we all kind of needed it, to be perfectly honest. Everyone a little tired after the Tour de France and Tour de France Femme. But we are back in your ears. And I am so pleased that joining me tonight, all the way from Melbourne, Lane Treloar. Welcome back.
Hello. It's nice to be here. Nice to see some friends.
Well, last time we were making a podcast, where were we? Where was past?
Probably Clermont-Ferrand.
Solange. We were in the Alps. We did one in Solange.
It was after that. Solange.
Beautiful Solange.
We tried to record a podcast at an ill-fated bistro, and then I had to go to an airport.
It was sad. Yeah.
Very sad.
Alas. We tried to get lunch. Failed. Left. Just stood up and left. It was great. And also joining me today, you just heard him, Dane Cash. Welcome back to the show.
Hello. I'll remind listeners that the Pretty Serious Bike Racing Podcast did not take a week off last week. We would never rob our listeners of the chance to hear some pretty serious analysis. Just want to point that out.
This isn't a performance review, Dane.
You never know. I'm always ready.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about. We obviously we're smack dab in the middle of Super Worlds. And Super Worlds, for those not paying any attention whatsoever, is where they take all of the cycling events and they stick them all in one place over the course of, 10 days or so. And apparently they're going to do this every 4 years. So they're doing it this year in Scotland. And in 2027, they're doing it in the Haute-Savoie, which is Annecy, kind of Alps area in France. And so, yeah, we're going to get more of this Super Worlds in 4 years' time. I think we'll talk later about whether we like Super Worlds. That's actually probably a pretty good topic. I have kind of been enjoying it, but we'll get to that a little bit later in the show. Before we kick off today, I'm going to tell you a little story. All right, so recently we did a big sort of reader-listener survey here at Escape Collective, and one of the things that came out of it was that a lot of our members are podcast listeners. A huge number of our members are podcast listeners. That's great. It means that you listen to this podcast and you went over to escapecollective.com/join and you hit join and you signed up. You put your money where your ears are, and we thank you for that. However, the numbers are still, they're just this nowhere near the number of signups as people that listen to this podcast. We can see you out there. We know where you are. We see you listening. No, wait, we hear you listening. I don't know.
Do we know where they are? I mean, we know roughly. Like, we have a rough geographic idea, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know exactly where any of them are.
Yeah, I don't want to scare people.
That's I know where they are as, like, ones and zeros in a computer
okay,
thing.
Okay.
We are outside your house.
We know that you're out there, people. We know there's a whole lot of you that have not yet signed up, but who listen to this podcast week in, week out. So this is me, just mild shame, to head over to escapecollective.com/join and jump on board, because a lot of your fellow listeners have already done so. More of your fellow listeners have already done so than I ever would have actually imagined. Thank you to all of you who have. If you haven't yet, please go do so. Your membership dollars fund absolutely everything we do here at Escape Collective. Absolutely everything. That includes this podcast. So if you like it, head on over there. Thank you. We wanted to start off with some of the biggest headlines that have come out of Super Worlds thus far. And by far, the biggest headline to come out of Super Worlds thus far is the fact that Alexander Vinokourov is back. Ian, you wrote a story about this. Tell us what on earth is happening.
So Alexander Vinokourov finally got his world championship after literally decades of trying in the 50-54 Grand Fondo World Championship, competing against a bunch of amateur riders. He was not an amateur rider. He was quite a good professional cyclist. Absolutely enhanced professional cyclist. But he got his world championship to go along with two bronze medals that he had in the elite categories.
So the Grand Fondo Worlds, I don't want to disparage anybody who has ever been to Grand Fondo Worlds, because I feel like for the average person, for, you know, like any of the three of us, for example, if you wanted to put in the time and effort and energy to train and prepare and get yourself to Scotland and, you know, do the Grand Fondo World Championships, which is all like age category split and things like that. I think that's fantastic. I think that's a great goal for either of the three of us or anybody like us to be going and doing. I feel somehow like Alexander Vinokourov should not be racing this bicycle race. Are you in line with me?
I don't know. I mean, he's gone through all of the process. He is qualified. So you have to qualify for the Grand Fondo Worlds. You have to be in the top 25% at any of a number of different qualifying events scattered around the world.
I mean, the whole thing is we bring it up because it's quite funny. It's quite funny to see somebody who has won an Olympic gold medal, who has been a contender at the Tour de France, who still runs a relatively successful sometimes professional cycling team, who was sort of, you know, bopping around at the Tour de France. We saw him, I'd say, like most days we saw him at the Tour. And clearly throughout all of that, despite the fact that you and I, Ian, were you know, gorging ourselves on French canard and red wine, Vino was training through all of this clearly and managed to show up like 2 weeks after the Tour de France in world championship winning shape.
And he has a lovely golden bike, which he drives around at the Tour, with the golden bike on top of his car, Avilia, to match the rest of the team bikes, but his is much more gold. So it's a very on-brand visual for somebody that won the Olympics.
Who spent enough time on Vito winning a Grand Fondo Worlds. We're going to move on to Sylvain Adams winning a Grand Fondo Worlds.
We spent enough time on Vito. So let's move on to another similar story.
We're going to very briefly mention this. Sylvain Adams also won his Grand Fondo World Championship. Different age group, right? I would assume. Can't have won the same age group.
He is an older gent, yes.
Okay. Shorts don't fit, that man. Billionaire. Needs to go buy some shorts that fit. Other than that, congrats to Sylvain Adams for you know, being a highly successful individual who also apparently trains enough to win Grand Fondo World Championships.
He's also since then picked up another world championship in the ITT.
Oh, really?
So it's a prolific winner at Glasgow, is Sylvain Adams.
Congratulations, Sylvain.
I would point out that according to Pro Cycling Stats rankings, Astana is the worst World Tour team of the year. Israel Premier Tech obviously has also had their trials and tribulations. They got knocked out of the World Tour because they weren't good enough. And I would just wonder, Would they actually maybe win some more races if respectively Vino and Sylvain Adams just put on some kit and went out there? I mean, I kind of would like to see it. That'd be a great story.
Do you think Vino could still finish Tour de France?
Finish? Maybe. Finish, maybe.
I bet he could.
Yeah.
I bet he could. The man is still fit. The man is still fit.
He is fit, but he's also more than 50 years old, Kaylee. He'd be less scary if he was racing than if he was a manager, because he is a bit of a terrifying, menacing presence at the bike race, I would say.
According to Wikipedia, he's also a colonel in the Kazakh army, so that tracks.
Yeah. He definitely has the look of somebody that could kill you with his bare hands.
Yeah. This pod is off to just a full flaming start here. I think we should shift over slightly, and we should mention... the biggest race of last weekend was won by one Mathieu van der Poel. An incredible, incredible solo effort. We dissected it in great detail over on the Pretty Serious Bike Racing podcast earlier this week. So I don't want to spend too much time doing the same thing again, to be perfectly honest. If you want that, head over and listen to that pod. But there were some other interesting things that happened that day. I feel like we need some sort of serious story somewhere in this podcast, because I'm about to pivot.
It's not going to be this one.
It's not going to be this one. I'm about to pivot to Mathieu van der Poel relieving himself in a kind Scottish man's and woman's toilet. Scottish household.
A household under construction, in fact. It was not yet finished. And they just happened to be there doing some works at the house. So it was lacking some of the creature comforts. The owners, Davey Findlay and Shona Findlay, just to give them their full credit for the toilet in question, didn't have internet, didn't have phone service, so were kind of oblivious about what the result of the race was until after the fact. And then I think a journalist from the Daily Record, which is a Scottish tabloid that looks roughly in the same ballpark as the Mirror or maybe the Sun. Somebody went to their house and was like, hey, did Matthew Vanderpool do a Matthew Vanderpoo here? And they answered yes. Yes, he did, which led to the very good headline, thank poo very much. Scott's couple's lavvy helps star win. So that's just it's good all round. The photo caption said flush with success, and that's Davey standing next to the toilet. And I was completely oblivious to this. It just passed me by until I saw a picture of the front page of the newspaper that day, and I was like, holy shit, this is remarkable. But apparently Vanderpool was
so yeah.
Was
what
very
happened?
Keen to-
what happened? Like walk me through the process here. How do we end up with Vanderpool stopping in the middle of a bicycle race to relieve himself?
Yeah. Okay. So there were some climate protesters on the course about 100k into the race, I believe. They glued themselves to the road, and I think the cause is good, and I think it's worth drawing attention to the threats of climate change. So, no issues there.
I was gonna small tangent. We have in general been very supportive of Adam Hansen, the sort of relatively new president of the Riders Union. Except he tweeted some kind of dumb things about this, basically saying like, why are you protesting in bikes, which in theory, bikes are part of the solution to this particular problem. I don't know. We don't take a whole lot of sort of stances like this in general, but I think our general stance of on protesting things that probably should be protested is that if you protest and no one is annoyed, it's not a particularly effective protest. And so, yeah. Just to back up what you were saying, Ian, kudos to this group, even if it was slightly unfortunate for the bike race itself. Some things must suffer.
Yeah, I mean, fortunate for Matthew Vanderpool.
Turned out to be very fortunate for Matthew Vanderpool, in fact. In fact, perhaps the most important thing of the entire... I mean, could he have finished without this?
He believes not. According to the Daily Record... he says he wouldn't have won race without help of kind locals who let him use their loo. So he apparently the way it went down is that the team manager of the Dutch team was just knocking on doors in the vicinity of where the protest was and asked if someone could use their facilities. He'd apparently been quote caught short. So he needed to unload himself in a hurry. And the fun detail of this entire, I don't know, situation is that it wasn't just Matthew Vanderpool that was doing it, but this was quite buried down in the article, but I'm imagining like a Benny Hill style sketch where people are just piling out of a tiny car and it's just the Dutch national team piling into the Findlay's toilet because four of the guys from the Dutch team, went in. There was just like a rotating door of people coming in, doing a poo in a stranger's house and then leaving. So, yeah, it's great.
I feel like the Dutch Federation should be wiring some money to this family. I mean, this is after more than one person, it really seems like a... Yeah.
Well, I feel like the Dutch Cycling Federation should probably be looking at what they're feeding their
that,
athletes.
That also... Well, I would point out, actually, the two biggest results for Dutch riders in the last decade, both of them, arguably the two biggest, have... come via this same way. Tom Dumoulin winning a Giro d'Italia, Mathieu van der Poel winning a world title. So there might be something in that.
Annemiek van Vleuten also had some gastric distress at the Tour de France last year. So I wonder what they're feeding them. It seems like there could be a broader national ailment that we should be focusing in on.
Who won that race?
The
women's Tour de France?
last year at Amica Van Vleuten.
Yeah, so is it an ailment? Or is this actually the secret weapon?
It's a secret.
Forget ketones. Forget whatever else is happening. We've cracked it, boys.
Yeah, we got it. We figured it out.
Can I just interject with a very good quote from Matthew Vanderpool, which he gave after winning the race to Dutch TV? He took the time to, quote, deliver a big, massive message to the Findleys, which I like because it's not his first big, massive message that he left with the Findleys that day. So I think it's nice that he took the time to thank them and to acknowledge that he had been in a backed up state and just needed to do his business and get on with the job.
So they were stopped for like a full hour.
Mm.
Right? I mean, it takes a while to unglue people from the pavement, I guess.
It takes a while to unclothe yourself from a race fit cycling jersey.
Also true. Well, so there you have it. Everyone else is carefully dissecting the sort of giant criterium course or discussing power figures or even talking about the broken boa on his shoe after he crashed or his broken cleat after he crashed. I saw a great interview today with Matt Stevens on that subject. But really, the thing that we can all point to as the thing that made Matthew Vanderpool or allowed Matthew Vanderpool to win his world title, climate protesters, an hour-long stop, and a tour de poo. Oh, look at the faces.
Dane doesn't like that one.
There's just, what? There's no wordplay. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, it was a bit basic. Come on, Kaylee. Do better.
I apologize.
We could segue into... I know it's a Christoph corner, but it is actually, boy howdy, the next generation of good.
Yeah. Junior race. Yeah? We should know who won. Who won?
Junior boys.
Who won the bicycle race?
Who won the bicycle race was... I have this. Albert Philipson.
There have been tons and tons and tons of bike races on this week. And in fact, I don't think I've woken up. And granted, this is partly a reality of being in my time zone, in like sort of Western U.S. time zone.
Our time zone.
Right, Sorry, Dane. I don't think I've woken up and turned on GCN and not had a bicycle race to watch for, well... If I had been home for the entirety of the Tour de France, it would have been all the way back to June at this point. But throughout this entire Super Worlds, there's stuff on every single day. So we do want to touch on some of the other races that have happened over the last half a week or so. Again, if you want like sort of the deep dive on the men's elite road race, we've got that in another podcast. But there's some other things that caught our eye. One of the ones was the junior men's road race for a couple different reasons. One, the junior road races are always interesting to watch because they are, at the same time, very good indicators of sort of the riders of tomorrow, right? Like the big names of tomorrow. And sometimes not, because sometimes they're just, particularly I think on the men's side, it's like whoever develops faster, basically. It's like who went through puberty earlier is part of the game in junior cycling. But still... There's always going to be riders at the front of that race that we are going to be talking about endlessly in probably not that long, actually. There's a couple other things that kind of stood out, though, as well. Ian, I didn't actually know that Alexander Kristoff has a brother.
He does. He's got, a half-brother.
Way younger. Yeah.
Yeah, a 19-year age gap between the two. So there are four children that she has with her current partner, Stein Ern. Which, if you translate it into English, means his name is Stone Eagle, which is cool name.
Excellent.
Stein Ern is also Alexander Kristoff's long-term coach and a cardiologist at Stavanger Hospital. So he's got a bit going on. So good on you, Stein Ern. Anyway, so Stein Ern and Alexander Kristoff's mother had a beautiful baby boy called Felix Ern Kristoff, who is Alexander Kristoff's half-brother, who came third in the junior men's... Do we call it junior men's? They're boys. They're literal children.
I think technically the name is junior men's, I think.
Okay, well, these young men rode very well. The winning rider was the 16-year-old youngest ever winner of the junior men's road race, Albert Philipson, who is on his way probably to signing with UAE Team Emirates for millions of dollars for a 10-year contract or something. Who knows? But anyway, he's currently the world champion, won by more than a minute, and is simultaneously also European mountain bike champion, Danish champion in the road race, time trial, mountain bike, and cyclocross. So that's Albert Philipson, the winner. In the bronze medal position, Felix Ehrenchristoff, who, according to Alexander, is on his way to achieving great things, can achieve anything, and beat Alexander Kristoff in a training session in the lead up to the Worlds. So I think that that's one to keep an eye on, especially if, like us, you are a fan of the Kristoff Corner.
It just means Kristoff Corner continues indefinitely, basically, because let's be honest, Alexander is probably near the end of his career at this point.
I think he's still contracted to Uno X for another couple of years until the end of 2025.
Yeah.
He's old. I mean, he's getting on, but he's my age, and I don't think that I'm at retirement age yet. I'm not a professional cyclist, but I think I've got a bit of life left in me.
I feel like the general outcome of this race is just a further data point in the conversation that we had really quickly in the Pretty Serious show the other day, Kaylee, where we talked about Denmark having a moment with the likes of Vingegaard and Mads Pedersen and all the other big stars, but also Albert Philipson winning. And I think we can also add to that just Scandinavia in general, or at least Norway, maybe not Sweden. Sweden needs to catch up, but Tobias Foss and Felix Ehrenchristoff and Jordan Nordhagen was the sixth place finisher in the junior boys race, junior men's race. So I think Denmark and Norway both maybe having a bit of a moment. Denmark also had a fifth place finisher with a sweet name, Theodor Storm. So yeah, good job from both Scandinavian countries there. Again, Sweden needs to play catch up a little bit.
I did have some chats with the general manager of Uno X at the tour, Jens Haugland, and I did touch on what is going on in Swedish cycling. And he gave some very articulate, well-considered responses, and I just haven't got around to writing them up yet. But basically, despite the fact that the geography and the weather conditions are kind of similar across those three countries, Scandinavia hasn't, or Sweden hasn't really, on the men's road racing side, had a big star since probably Magnus Backstedt. I think they've got one rider at the pro team level currently, and nobody in the world tour on the men's side. They're doing a bit better on the women's side. So I think that there's a number of different factors. It's investment in development of riders from the local federation. It's massively, I think, whether there's a crop of leading riders like Vingegaard and all those other Danish riders that have been doing really well the last few years. And in Norway, there was probably a little bit of a lull after Tor Hushovd retired, but then you've got Edvald Bosenhagen, Alexander Kristoff, who were kind of the two big stars, which leads to increased interest in cycling, increased investment in cycling, and then all of a sudden you've got Team Uno X, who are mostly Norwegian, a little bit Danish team, riding in the Tour de France with an entirely Norwegian and Danish outfit. So I think that there's a number of different factors to it. But it is kind of sad to see Sweden languishing on that front.
This is a placeholder's question, not a pretty serious question. Well, it's pretty serious, just sort of like language nerd question that I'm going to ask because it's the placeholders. Do you know if they speak Danish and Norwegian in the team? Or do the Danes and the Norwegians speak English to each other?
No, they speak... they're mutually understanding.
And that's what I'm asking. So do the Danes speak their language to the Norwegians and vice versa, as opposed to all of them switching to English?
Yeah, no, they speak Norwegian and Danish on the team bus.
Yeah,
and
fascinating.
At least in the men's team, there are some English speaking riders in the women's team. So I assume that they would be speaking English in the women's team. But for the men's, they are entirely Danish and Norwegian, and don't actually have a plan to change from that. There's enough new talent coming through from the likes of Søren Barenschold, who I think won the under 23 time trial championship last year in Wollongong. Torsten Train, who's developed to the point that he's attracting interest from World Tour teams and is likely to leave next year. But there's enough young Norwegian talent coming through and Danish talent that they don't actually need to look beyond that recruiting pool.
Other races of interest, I mean, the junior time trials, I think, are always quite interesting. In fact, they're often better indicators of the stars of the future than the road races are. Because, you know, a world's road race is always a bit chaotic. There's quite a bit of luck involved. Maybe a little bit less so on this particular course, where it seemed like the strongest riders could kind of just brute force their way a lot of the times, as long as they were pretty good at cornering. But yeah, the TTs are always an interesting sort of place to look. I wasn't particularly familiar with the winner of the men's junior time trial, Lorenzo Milesi, an Italian. This is the U23. This is under 23. But he did stand out to me as a former winner of a stage of the Tour de l'Avenir, and he's got a fair amount of interesting results to his name. He's 21 years old already, so he's not, you know, it's not that much younger than like Tadej Pogacar at this point, but still is quite a bit younger. And on just we like to sort of chuck names out there for folks to keep an eye on. And generally winning that U23 time trial or junior time trial, like I was saying, those are really good indicators of sort of the riders of the future. And frankly, that Tour de l'Avenir stage win is another one that is, pretty rare for a rider to be able to pull off something like that, and then we don't hear about them sort of 5-6 years later.
Finney was a former under 23 TT winner. I think Dennis finished second in an under 23 TT. Max Schachmann as well, and then Mikkel Bjerg won a boatload of them. So yeah, definitely, it's hard to do that without being pretty talented.
Yeah, the men's women's junior ITTs I think happen Thursday morning. So by the time you listen to this, you will know who won those, and you should go take a look at the sort of top 10 of both of those events. And, well, just put the names in the back of your head somewhere, because they will show up again. Before we kind of move on to, we have a number of other topics to cover, but I want to just discuss whether we like this Super Worlds thing. Like, does it work? Does it make sense? I mean, again, the whole idea here, normally we have world championships kind of spread out all throughout the calendar. Road Worlds, for example, the one that we would be talking about most often on this podcast is generally late September, early October. You know, you finish the Vuelta, you have Worlds, then you have Lombardia, and then the season ends, right? And this year we're going to have one, you know, potentially the opportunity for, if Vanderpool really wanted to go ride the Vuelta in the World Champs stripes. He's not going to. I should just say that out loud. But he could if he wanted to. We've also got, you know, we've got mountain bike stuff coming up tomorrow morning and this weekend. We've had all the ITTs. We've got artistic cycling. Unclear still exactly how that fits in. I don't know, Ian, if you've taken a look at all.
I've taken a look at the artistic cycling.
But it exists. It exists, and if we wanted to, we could watch it. All these different events stuck in one place over the course of 10 days. Good thing, bad thing? Do we like it? Does it make sense?
I think it's a pretty cool thing in that it gives an Olympic kind of feel to the cycling events and is probably pretty good preparation for being in the year before Paris 2024. Good preparation for the riders who are looking to double up on multiple disciplines next year. I think that there are some challenges in terms of training and pacing yourself for certain athletes who are going for events on both the road or in time trials and on the track. You've got people like Filippo Ganna, who won the individual pursuit on Monday, I think, and is going for the time trial world championship coming up. And also Chloe Dygart, who did the same and is going for the double. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how people manage like a 4-minute effort versus a half an hour effort or an hour effort. Same for Matthew Vanderpoel, who's up for the cross country. after winning the men's road race.
I wonder. I mean, from the media perspective, it makes it a little bit harder, I think, for us to focus in on some of the good stories from the other disciplines, where we might be able to give them a little more breathing room if we didn't have the road racing stuff going on, which is, I think, generally our focus. At the same time, though, I wonder if the fans, who are maybe only tangentially related in, say, track cycling, might be able to get a little bit more exposed to that, or vice versa. Maybe they're tangentially related or interested in road cycling, and maybe they're more interested in, you know, downhill, but they happen to see the road stuff going on, and this gives them a chance to pay more attention. So while for the media, I'm just griping about our, you know, ability to cover all these things at once, it might actually be a cool thing for the fans, especially if you're there. I think if you're in Scotland, it makes it much easier. So I'm assuming the fan experience is good.
I'd have to imagine they'd be having an awesome time because, you know, with the Olympics, if you've got the Olympics in your hometown, you don't really care what event you're seeing. You're just like, oh, I've got tickets to go and see something. So there'd be a level of excitement about it. I imagine that there'd be more interest in things like the artistic cycling and events like that, which probably struggling a little bit for attendance because they tend to be awarded to distant places a lot of the time that are prepared to put something on. But in this scenario, you'd have people that are just stoked to see some bike riding.
I've been loving it. I mean, the reason I ask is partly because I just want to talk about how much I've been loving it, which I didn't really expect because, I don't know, we are quite cynical toward many of the things that the UCI tries to do, right? And to be very clear, like, the reason that the UCI is doing this is the potential for an increase in broadcast viewership and so therefore broadcast revenue, which is the World Championships are one of the primary means for the UCI to fund itself. And they do that via broadcast revenue at the World Championships, right? And the basic idea is, yeah, it's essentially, like you said right at the beginning, Ian, it's Olympics for cycling, where you've got all these different things. You can kind of bundle it a bit better than you could otherwise. And that's the reason the UCI is doing this is primarily to try to make more money off of it. But the reality is, if they make more money off it, it's because people actually liked it more and watched more bike racing. Right. And that's what I found myself doing. Right. Like I will occasionally turn on a track world championships and watch a bit of it, watch a Madison or whatever. I will often turn on mountain bike world cups or mountain bike world championships, but I've gotten into this habit now being home throughout all of this. And again, part of this is time zone, but like wake up in the morning, make a coffee, see what bike racing is on. And just watch it and watch it. You can watch it like throughout much of the day here in the U.S. And it's genuinely it's helped along by the fact that GCN is fantastic and GCN Eurosport are doing a great job with all these different events. But it's been a good product. It's been a good, I should add that, get yourself a VPN, watch some GCN. GCN does a great job with it. Anyway, I've been really enjoying it, and I genuinely think that is an excellent product if you think about it in those terms, which just means it's just good for bike fans who want to watch a whole bunch of bike racing this week.
I'll shock some people here by saying that credit to David Lepartien for this one, because it is actually his personal passion project, the Super Worlds. I think that there's probably some influence from how close he is to the IOC and his ambitions in that organization, having recently become the head of the French National Olympic Committee and being talked about as a successor to Thomas Bach as the president of the IOC eventually. But I think that this is a good one, and I would like to acknowledge that he has done a thing.
Maybe you'll get credentials next time. You never know. Aww.
Let's not get too carried away.
Like I said, there's another one, 2027 Haute-Savoie, which, yeah, I mean, part of me is just like, it's actually just better. It's better to have all the bike racing all at one time, because if you're a bike racing fan, you can just watch it all. And yes, I know it's a bit weird to have Road Worlds in August. I don't like having Road Worlds in August, I'll tell you that, but I like having all the bike racing in one place. I like being able to like give it a week, get into a habit, turn on whatever's on throughout the day, watch things that I wouldn't have watched otherwise. And that is the key. Going back to the sort of the finances, the revenue, the broadcast revenue side of this, if I'm watching things that I wouldn't have watched otherwise, I think other people are watching things that they wouldn't have watched otherwise, which means more people are watching more things, which means the broadcast rights are more expensive, which again gets back to probably the original reason for doing this. But whatever. I'm watching more because it's a better product than it was before, and it's a better viewing experience than it was before. And yeah, watching downhill mountain bike the other day, flipping over to track racing right afterward. Like, that's amazing. That's fantastic. And so, yeah, kudos to the UCI for pulling this one off. And I do think that the Haute Savoie one will be fantastic because it's in an amazing part of the world, and they can do all these amazing things up there in the Alps. So, yeah, well done. I enjoyed it. I'd love to hear actually what listeners think. Hit us in Discord. Let us know what you think of the Super Worlds. Have you been watching more bike racing of more disciplines than you would have otherwise? That's the big question. Well, Dane, I've known you for a long time, and I feel like I pretty confidently say that there are two things in this world that you absolutely adore: time trials and Braveheart.
Wow, and I'm really glad that McDonald's wasn't one of the ones that you dropped, because I feel like that it's just something that, you know, I do like McDonald's, but I'm glad that it's something else there.
All right, McNugget. Let's talk about how those two things have come together for you at this World Championships.
Yeah, so I have to tell you, listeners, first of all, you should go read the cultural preview that I did, just some notes on Glasgow and Scotland, the lowlands in general. And it's very interesting if you're a fan of history, that the time trial really goes by the three major battles depicted in the film Braveheart. Most spectacularly, it starts in Stirling, right? I mean, that alone is, yeah. And that is where, in the movie Braveheart, the first big battle of the movie takes place. Of course, the actual historical battle took place on a bridge. It's literally called the Battle of Stirling Bridge. No bridge in the movie. Slight oversight. But nobody really said that movie was historically accurate. They did say it was entertaining, I guess. And so, yeah, if you're a big fan of history, go watch the time trial. And while you're there, you can see Stirling and Falkirk and Bannockburn, three major battlefields of the First Scottish War of Independence. And I'm so glad that the organizers of this Super Worlds decided that they were going to visit this very historic place for nerds like me. There's a monument to William Wallace right near where the time trial course goes. There's a sword that is supposed to be his. Doubtful that it actually was, but you can see it if you're really interested. Yeah, it's really cool that they've done this for the nerds like me. And I don't know, maybe the race will be cool too. We'll find out.
Can we have a kilometer marker for the point on the course at which the "they'll never take our freedom" quote comes from?
The "they'll never take our freedom" quote, I think, comes from like literally kilometer zero. I mean, they start at Stirling, so I think...
Oh, is that where it's from?
I'm pretty sure the Battle of Stirling is where he says that in the movie. Again, no bridge in the film. Again, the film is not the most accurate of films. Yeah.
I like how you said, without any further explanation, you're like, it starts in Stirling. That speaks for itself.
It starts in Stirling, the site of a bridge on which a great battle was fought, which is depicted in the film.
I haven't seen this movie
since,
like...
Mel Gibson said, "they'll never take off."
I haven't seen this movie in a very long time.
1999, maybe. When did it come out?
Not that long before then. Yeah.
I think I would have seen it within a couple years of it coming out. Yeah. Great film, though.
Sorry, you introduced this segment as Braveheart being one of Dane's two defining passions in life.
I think he...
And we've just learned that he hasn't watched it for like a decade.
I do think that there was some irony there. I think Kayla is also... He mentioned time trials, and he knows that I don't love time trials. You know that, right? I mean, like, I just think that they're more entertaining than you do.
I was just looking for a way to intro the segment. I was really scraping the bottom of the barrel here. That's all I was doing.
I do know that Dane loves most things cycling, so I wouldn't have put it past him that he'd just be like a TT head.
I mean, I actually really don't like team time trials. I think that is a known thing, right?
Which is just insane, let's be honest. An insane take. It's batshit crazy.
Yeah.
Well, so there you go. If you out there are a Braveheart fan, you now know that from roughly kilometer zero of the time trial course, you can get your Braveheart fix.
Get your history fix, really. You don't even need to be a fan of Braveheart. If you're somebody who dislikes Braveheart because it's ahistorical, you'll also enjoy the time trial.
You'll probably enjoy it even more.
There you go. Exactly.
Yeah, which is really, that's the way that I should have introed, is that Dane hates Braveheart because it is ahistorical.
We don't have to speak in absolutes here. Dane was highly entertained by Braveheart when he was 13 years old. He thought it was the greatest thing that ever happened to film. 34-year-old Dane, he's a little bit more ambivalent, but, you know, he appreciates what it did for the historic epic. Yeah.
It's time for today's Daily Pain. Weekly Pain. It's Weekly Pain now, because we're not doing a daily podcast, thank God. We are doing a weekly podcast. We're back doing a weekly podcast. For those who didn't listen to any of our Tour de France podcasts, first of all, what were you doing? Second of all, we did a thing every single day, starting pretty early, that we ended up calling the Daily Pain, and it was essentially a quiz, a game, and basically I would just sort of make these things up, mostly on the spot. Yeah?
This is so heavily, like, in-joke structured, the Daily Pain name. You say, we just call it the Daily Pain. We called it the Daily Pain because in France, bakeries sell pain, which is bread, and they just have big signs in every town that you're driving through, and it just says, pain, pain, pain. So that's where the name comes from.
So we had a lot of Daily Pain, and so therefore we had to give our listeners a lot of Daily Pain, and so now we bring the Daily Pain weekly, basically because I like quizzing you two. That's basically what this comes down to. We're gonna play a little game here. This is a game that I've stolen from a NPR radio show called Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. In this game, I have taken both of your last names and I have extrapolated, and I have put together a number of questions related to your last names, both of your last names, which you will have to answer these multiple choice questions, and you will get 1 point for each multiple choice question that you answer correctly. 3 points is available to each of you. Would you like Ian to answer a series of questions about gnomes and Dane Cash to answer a series of questions about hard paper currency?
I feel like Dane's got it a bit easier there.
I don't know. You could be a gnomic expert. We wouldn't know. That
just to be clear, the reason we ended up at gnomes is Trellor, Ian's last name, apparently means, if when I Googled it, homestead with a garden. And what is in any garden at a homestead?
Yeah, of course.
Gnomes.
Oh, garden gnomes. Yeah, I thought garden you meant, gnomes. Like literal magical creatures.
Same. Yeah.
Yeah. Dane, you want to go first? You go first.
Sure.
All right, we got 3 questions here. You get 1 point for each correct answer.
Yep.
In the mid-1800s, the French government printed a series of banknotes with a distinct characteristic. What was unusual about these banknotes? A, they were scented with different fragrances. B, they were printed on silk instead of paper. C, they featured intricate holograms. D, they were rounded shaped like coins.
4 potential answers. And I have no idea, so it's a 25% chance of getting this one right. Honestly, I don't even remember what the answers were, but that's fine because it's just going to be. Yeah.
Fragrances, silk instead of paper, holograms, round.
Can't be holograms. No. We're going to go with silk.
Correct.
Yes.
Ding, 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 ding. Dane gets a point. Ooh, that's rough for you, Ian. That is rough for you. I think that was just a guess, but you guessed correctly. Was it the silk and the 1800s French? Was that basically?
I mean, process of elimination a little bit.
They like a soft fabric. They're French.
Yeah. I may have been a professional, part-time, but professional historian of the 18th and 19th century before I was a cycling journalist as well.
Oh, I shouldn't have given
you that. This is rigged.
So I didn't really want to point that out as you were asking the question. I figured I'd wait to tell you that until now.
All right, over to Ian to talk about pixies. Great.
Gnomes?
All right, Ian, your question. Gnomes are renowned for their mischievous behavior. What is their... what is their favorite prank? Replacing garden tools with rubber replicas. redirecting GPS directions to fairy tale lands, rearranging furniture just slightly off center, teaching squirrels to do the Macarena.
Whoa, I mean, number four is pretty tempting. But the way that you're laughing about that, like, you wrote that.
I wrote all of them. I mean, technically, yeah. I Googled some gnome stuff, and then I wrote, you know, I wrote four options. Only one of them came up in the Google search I did about gnomes.
I think gnomes predated GPS.
Probably.
I would also... I think that they are just lightly messing with the feng shui of your outdoor furniture. That's my guess.
You are correct. We have one to one.
Wow.
Wow. I'm impressed. This game has absolutely nothing to do with cycling, and so I apologize to all of our listeners out there who were hoping for more. All right, Dane, which African country's banknotes famously include pictures of local wildlife, such as giraffes, elephants, and rhinos, on both sides, not just one side? A, Egypt. B, Kenya. C, Nigeria. D, South Africa.
It can't be Egypt.
No further explanation needed.
It's not Egypt. I don't think it's Nigeria. I think it's Kenya.
2 points for Dane. Hoo-hoo. 2 points for Dane. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It is Kenya. Ian, we're back to you and your gnome questions.
I like that mine have some basis in reality.
What was your working there? Were you just going back through like colonialist
Kenya is not known for its... You don't go on safari in Egypt.
Yeah, so Kenya has most of the safari stuff.
And yeah, Kenya is generally the one where you go to see things like giraffes.
Yeah, right, okay.
Gnomes are famous for their ability to fix things. What is their secret?
First up, didn't know that.
We're all learning something today.
What is their secret tool? Duct tape enchanted by leprechauns? We should have Dave Rome on this one, to be perfectly honest. Gnome wrench that tightens screws with gnome magic. A magical spanner. That's also a bottle opener. DIY instruction manuals written in gnome speak. That's it. You only have three. No, wait.
Four. Yeah, four.
Four. Yeah. So duct tape enchanted by leprechauns, gnome wrench with magic, a magical spanner that's also a bottle opener, DIY instruction manuals written in gnome speak.
Well, I'm really struggling to get a gauge on when the gnome was popularized. Because I would have thought that they were much older than duct tape. I'm going to go with number two.
Well, I don't remember what that was.
The gnome wrench. Impregnated with gnome magic.
It's a good guess, Ian. But actually, it's a magical spanner that's also a bottle opener.
Which is kind of similar. Right,
I'll come back from this disappointment.
All right, Dane. Well, I mean, if you get this one right, this is for the win.
That's a lot of pressure.
For the win today. Which country issued banknotes in the shape of a guitar in the 1980s?
Guitar? Like the thing that you play?
A guitar.
For music?
Yep. Okay. Celebrating a famous musician.
In the 80s?
In the 80s. Brazil, the U.S., Italy, Japan.
Japan.
Wah, wah.
If I guess Brazil. Correctly, do I get the point?
Oh, I said it out loud.
I was going to say Brazil. Damn it.
I feel like this game has gone on quite long already.
It has gone a long time. But this is Ian's chance to tie it up.
It's Ian's chance to tie it up. All right. Question. What do gnomes use to communicate over long distances? Tin cans and a really long string. Garden gnome telegraph lines, whispers carried by the wind through their pointy hats, gnome signal projected into clouds using flashlight.
I'm going to go with, what was number two?
Number two was garden gnome telegraph lines.
B. Yeah, I'm going to go garden gnome telegraph lines because I thought that we were dealing with oldie-timey things, and now we're not dealing with oldie-timey things. and I'm surprised that there's not some sort of dial-up internet connection for them. So yeah, we'll go that.
You are correct. Today's game ends as a tie.
Oh wow.
A draw, a 2-2. We're going to have you both on to settle this at some point because I've run out of questions that I've
I'm really impressed, Ian, because your questions were just completely made up and you still managed to do pretty damn well. So nice job.
I think I sort of flirt with the fringes of the surreal at most points.
Should we do a cycling-related tiebreaker?
If we could do it quickly. One of us has to edit this, and it's not either of you guys, so...
All right, so the cycling-related tiebreaker is you must name a team this rider has ridden for at some point in their career. We're going to go back and forth.
Oh, boy.
So, flip a coin. Ding, 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 ding. We're going to start with Ian. You must name one. If you cannot name one, the other person has to name one, and then they win. Otherwise, we just keep going into the depths of the night. The rider is... Mark Cavendish.
Astana, Kazakhstan.
You are correct. I should also say that team name changes, but that's the same team, doesn't count, right? So like the various different versions of a team. If it's like the same management structure, same ownership, you know, new sponsor, doesn't count. But you can name any of the teams that were included in it. Sorry. Dane.
Dimension Data.
Dimension Data is correct. Back to you, Ian.
HTC High Road.
/ Columbia.
I would take issue with the pronunciation of H, but Sky.
Correct.
T-Mobile.
Correct. Ooh. We're down to 1, 2, 3 left.
Quickstep.
Correct. One of them you're never going to get. So there's basically one left.
As professional teams?
Yep.
Professional
as defined by Pro Cycling Stats, where I grabbed this from earlier. It's like continental and above, basically.
Oh, this is hard. I reckon like a sneaky Milram or something.
No Milram. Womp womp. Dane?
I'm feeling it's in the same same vein, but no one's really coming to mind.
You're gonna slap yourself in the face when I say it a lot. Yep, the listeners out there are screaming it out.
Oh, they are. Oh, yeah, I know that because I've edited these before and I've done that. I've screamed at you in my head. But also, this would be the point at which Ian would say, "I need an answer." Were this the TDF Daily?
Yep.
Well, I want my random team that's not it to be Barlow World. Because that's the Chris Froome random team. I don't know who the obvious team that I'm forgetting is.
Not Barlow World. Sparkass, which was one of his first continental program that he was racing for in the very beginning of his career before he signed for T-Mobile. Technically, though, a professional team. And finally, the one that you are going to facepalm over, he rode for Bahrain McLaren.
Of course he did. For 1 year. Yeah.
That was all right. The actual cycling game was still kind of fun. I think we should play the actual cycling game next time. As much
fun
as gnomes were. And you're still tied. And so, frankly, we just continue into next episode. I think that's what we do. Yeah. All right.
Thank you, Dana. Worthy adversary.
Worthy.
I agree. You were a very worthy adversary. Yeah.
I have a number of other cycling related games that we will play for Weekly Pain. We'll try to keep them slightly more on topic. We did this time. I was just feeling creative, you know? It's all good. All right. Well, we're gonna wrap it up for the day. Today's placeholders a little bit fast and loose, as you may have noticed.
Slow
but again, yeah. But you know, less fast and loose over at Pretty Serious Bike Racing Podcast. Part of what we're trying to do, if I'm very sort of blunt about it, is make sure that those two podcasts are not the exact same damn thing every week. So we're gonna be all about placeholders is going to be all about sort of the biggest stories, the things that caught our eye every single week. Sometimes it's going to be silly stuff. Sometimes it's going to be big, important stuff. But it's going to be whatever caught our eye. And Pretty Serious Bike Racing, well, it says the name, it does what it says on the tin. I think is the phrase. It's going to go deep on bike racing itself. So listen to both is really what I would suggest. We will be back next week with another episode of Placeholders Podcast. It was just a joy to do this with you both this evening. Ian, thanks.
Fun as always.
And Dane, thank you.
Thanks.
All right, listeners, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.